Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness, a college education, a good job, a healthy family, respect for your neighbors, retirement, happiness. Repeat after me to attain your goals. Happiness.
Ignorance.
A college education.
Mental programming.
A good job.
Slavery.
A healthy family.
Corporate control.
Respect for your neighbors.
Governmental abuses.
Retirement.
Obey.
Happiness.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with Todd.
You say funny things.
Yo, what's up, bitches? I'm back.
Hey, what's up, man?
I heard on the forums that y'all thought I was dead.
That was the rumor.
Yeah, we thought you traveled and died in a plane crash, which kind of goes along with this episode.
Nah, I can't leave you white bitches alone. And you half white bitch over there.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're actually recognizing him as half black?
Yeah, today. I'm being nice. Since we're talking about Wu-Tang and the Tiger style.
Okay, that's right.
I'm scared to talk to black people. I'm just going to be quiet over here. I only talked to Dave.
Yeah, you're already mispronouncing Nicanor's name on the last podcast.
Yeah
you about to get, you almost went black, Brent, but you better stay tier one before you get fucked up in this bitch.
That was Tyrone Porky Pig impression for a second there.
What you mean, white boy?
That's a remix. You call it a remix.
Oh, man. So where you been at?
I've been on vacation.
That's what they call it, huh?
Yeah. Well, what happened was, see, I went to come out of the house, out of my project, and there was a wall. And a Trump apparently found me, walled me in, and it took me like a month and a half to get out.
Damn.
But I dug my way out. My fingernails is gritty, but now I'm here.
Mom spaghetti.
Oh, spaghetti keeps coming up.
The old half weird. Black white boy still got the rhymes.
Oh, you're on one today.
Shut the fuck up. you old bastard.
All right, well, you know what, Tyrone? Turn his mic off.
Okay.
There we go. All right. I don't know. We're here again today. What are we talking about?
I was going to ask Tyrone if they had Yucateco in prison. Someone told me, Dave had said they had El Yucateco Little Packs in prison.
Not at the one I went to.
Turn his mic on.
No, they didn't have Little Packs at the prison I was at. They actually, got
had bottles?
Yeah.
That's glass bottles. It sounds dangerous.
No, they didn't have no El Yucateco. They had the Cholula.
How dare you utter those words in here, Tyrone? I might be white and scared, but then
turn the mic
words.
Off again. Turn the mic off again.
All right. Well, I got to go. Y'all do whatever you're going to do. Talk about Wu-Tang without me, y'all bastards. What are you looking at, white boy?
Nothing, sir. Nothing.
All right. Well,
I like it when he stops by.
Yeah. Racist cunt.
He makes me nervous. It just seems like he's on edge. Like,
Brent does get scared. Yeah,
he does. He does get like the
deer in the headlights look. Like, yeah. I don't know. You don't appreciate his darkness, that dark chocolate?
He's scary, man.
He is scary.
Yeah.
He's taller than you'd think.
Mm-hmm. He's like 4'3".
His voice is deep for his size.
Yeah. That throw everybody off? What was happening? We're talking about Wu-Tang Clan,
sure
36
listening.
Chambers.
Did he really leave? Did you hear the door
close?
I'm scared. I want to talk shit.
It's dark over there. We just might not be able to see it. He never smiles.
He just closed his eyes. He's black.
I like that that's always Brent's refrain whenever I say something. So I had a... It didn't dawn on me how strange it was until this morning, or until like right now, like what happened to me this morning. I went, took the dogs for a walk, came back home, sat in the backyard before I would feed them just to cool down, because in Bakersfield it gets hot as balls early in the morning. So I take a walk, show up, come back to the house. I'm sitting there. I have very like home improvy kind of neighbors, so they're always like doing different stuff. And I'm sitting back here and I hear someone of like the neighbor to the left of my house was doing something that sounded like it had to do with like an air compressor. There was like a little compressed air burst kind of a thing. And then I heard it a couple of seconds later. And the second time I heard it, there was like the air compressed noise. And then I heard something hit like the side of my house. And I was like,
he taped off the safety on the nail gun.
No, I was like, that's around. A BB gun.
Oh.
And like, I looked up from where I was at and I could see the whole side of the house and my fence, and I could see movement right there. And it's right where he parks his RV. So like, if he was getting into his RV, that's exactly where he would be standing, like right in front of my fence.
Right.
And all of a sudden I see a fucking, the barrel of a BB gun, like come up over the fence, like aiming at my house. Like the side of my fucking house. So I get up and I made a mistake. I should have gone out the other gate because I would have fucking busted them, but I went through the house and I think they heard me go through the slider, et cetera. So by the time I got up front, there was nobody out there.
Is it a kid?
Had to be a kid. I saw blonde hair, and my neighbor's Mexican, so he's got black hair.
Blonde hair and a BB gun. I don't know anything about this.
But I'm standing there. And as soon as I get out front, like I hit record on my phone before I open the door, go outside. I'm recording, trying to catch a glimpse of the little bastard who's doing that. It's just some fucking kid, you know, some teenager, some kid, whatever. And across the street at my neighbor's house, there's like a work crew. I don't know what they're doing, but they're working in the backyard. And there's like one Mexican cat on the work crew, and they're all holding some like massive metal thing, and they're just standing there doing nothing. And the like one of them looks at me and like gives me like two nods with like concern on his face, and I just like mimed a BB gun and he like nodded yes, and like I pointed like left or right and he nodded to the right.
You guys use Navy and, SEAL, like,
and I was, and I held up one and he was like no, and I said two and he said yeah, and I mimed out like short.
That's give me head. You're just giving, so you know, it. That means give me head.
Yeah,
I mimed out short for like kids, and he said yeah.
It's this like
and
this. Not like this.
I was. And I like waved him to come over because he obviously saw the whole fucking thing. So I waved him to come over and he like shakes his head no.
That's because you asked a migrant worker for a blowjob.
Yeah.
Well, no, wait.
Like, I'm not coming over there.
It's weird because I nod my head no. He nods his head no. And I kind of give him a shrug like, why not? And like he turns and he looks at my neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And like gives him for just like half a second, gives him a shitty look, and then looks back at me with like a sorry, man, I can't. Like, because this white bastard is a slave driver was basically
right.
What he was saying. So now I'm sitting here and I'm like, so I'm like having fucking Morse code sign language with a
you almost transcended
dude.
The language barrier. Like, but then you asked for a blowjob.
Yeah.
What
when
the
you,
fuck
when you
is
for
happening?
Head, he's not coming over. Yeah.
And it's like some little shit was firing at the side of my. There's nothing there to shoot.
Big yeah. Black guy.
No, I don't think he even saw me.
Like that one in my house, I'd have went out there with the real gun, fucking chases that.
No, like guy. I said, I wish I would have gone around the other gate because I would have caught him red-handed. But as soon as I went through the house, they heard the slider, they took off. By the time I got to the front door and got out there, they were fucking gone.
So they were in your neighbor's backyard, though?
No, it was my front yard.
And they were on the side of the trailer. There's a trailer.
He has a trailer parked in his driveway, like up against my fence.
Oh, gotcha.
And like right where his door is the front fence to the side.
So they weren't in his backyard.
They were in his backyard. They were in the front of my yard aiming the BB gun over the front fence.
My buddy, they live in Oildale, which we've referenced that before, but they found a hand grenade. Why did I say that word?
A hand grenade.
Hand grenade in under their trailer. Like, because there's a place called the War Bunker. Like,
Oh, yeah.
And it's some crazy, like, hidden Nazi thing where they sell real weapons out of the back and they've been busted and shit. But there was a hand grenade under their fucking trailer and the bomb squad had to come and detonate it in their front yard with a robot and shit. Yeah.
Damn. So,
BB guns is nothing, man. BB guns and trailers. You get a oil dial, they got fucking hand grenades.
Yeah. Shit. But so the ultimate takeaway I had was, what the fuck is my neighbor up to that the manual laborer was so afraid of him that he didn't want to come over and tell me about the...
Your neighbor asked for head, too?
He's like,
he's like, I did the international side for Are They Short, but really it was give me head. And he's like, no. Yeah.
We were holding out big wieners left to right, just so you guys know.
Yeah.
So this is a good segue, though. I mean, you transcended a language barrier to help battle an adversary that was trying to shoot at you, and that's what happens here. So... today we're talking the Flying Tigers. Yeah, no, totally. No,
it's kind of different.
It's a little bit different. Pretty much the same.
Not really.
Yeah. Mexicans, BB guns, airplanes.
Asians, trees.
Yeah. That's close.
It's pretty close.
I don't think so. I think you guys are wrong. At this one, the white
kids. It's as close as Get Them While You Can, Flat Earth was. I think BB guns and language barriers is pretty close.
I think it's pretty close.
I don't think so. All the Chinese speak English.
I don't think they do.
I think they do.
Let's make orange chicken all day. I don't speak English.
Sounds delicious.
So our topic is the Flying Tigers.
36 Chambers.
I have watched all three of those on Netflix.
What?
The 36 Chambers of Shaolin. There's three of them. I've watched them all.
But this is a different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not. That's not what I was talking about.
Some of them
about.
Probably knew martial arts.
The Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah.
No, we're not. Listen to the album? We're not talking about the Wu-Tang Clan.
We're not?
No.
I'm just going to let Dave talk.
You guys lied.
Between Tyrone and BB Gun neighbor fights, people are pissed right now.
It's the Flying Tigers were...
This is our show.
That's right.
Turn it off.
The Flying Tigers, actually, I think a lot of people don't really know much about them or who they were. I'm a bit of a World War II buff, so when I first saw some stuff about these guys a couple years ago, it just fucking blew my mind that I'd never even heard of these guys and what they did and so forth. But the Flying Tigers were actually the first Americans to engage in World War II.
Before Pearl Harbor.
Before Pearl Harbor even started, like they were the first ones in it. And what it was, in a nutshell, so the Flying Tigers was a flight group of ultimately at the peak it was 100 planes.
Which started out as like 10 though. It was just ten Americans.
But at their peak it ended up being 100 planes. But it was they were called the first American volunteer group, or the AVG. And they ended up working loosely for the Chinese Air Force in 1941 and 1942.
They were official members of the Chinese military.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like enlisted. It was kind of cool.
But like the stuff that I saw was like, no, they were fully enlisted. They were fully members for 1 year. They were members of the Chinese Air Force. But they had this, their command structure was completely isolated from pretty much anything else.
They didn't have any rules.
No, they didn't have any rules. So the
And they got paid way better.
Yeah, they got paid a lot. So they got the name Flying Tigers from the locals. They called them the Fai Hao, which meant Flying Tigers, and the name ended up sticking. They have one of the most famous nose arts you'll see from World War II. If you see like the shark, like the open kind of shark mouth on the front of an airplane, that's the...
Which was interesting where they got that from. They said that they were looking at a magazine that was printed in like Thailand or something. It was And they had the pictures of the Australian planes,
and
they ended up adopting that artwork on their planes because they thought it looked cool.
Oh wow!
And it represented them, so that's how they got that. It was pretty interesting.
And it's still part of I think the 14th Division or some group in the Air Force still uses that as their nose art. But so just to say like why these guys were so badass, just to throw some stats at you up front. So in 7 months, right, they were only active in China for 7 months. The Flying Tigers confirmed shot down 296 enemy planes, and there were 300 hits that were probables on top of that. So they definitely shot down 296, but they hit 300 others and probably made them crash, but they couldn't confirm it.
I saw after they weren't the Flying Tigers anymore, they became the 23rd Fighter Group between 1942 and 1945. They destroyed 1,000 Japanese aircraft, 184 merchant ships, 817 bridges, 1,225 locomotives, and 60,000 Japanese troops killed.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. No, so that's like a gangster gang, dude.
No, it's ridiculous. So, and even in that 1 year, they were responsible for the death of 1,500 Japanese pilots, and they lost 25.
And their planes were, the Japanese planes were fat, where they were more maneuverable because they were lighter. So they had a very specific strategy that they had to really stick to and conform to.
Their planes, the Tomahawks, were not meant to dogfight. Like, they were told not to dogfight in those planes.
Is that they're called the P-40 or whatever?
Yeah, it's
called
Tomahawks.
They were Tomahawks or the Warhawks. They were called both.
And they were heavier planes.
They could take they had armor plating on them. And
they had
the
armor plating around the cockpit and the motor. Yeah. Right. So they were able to take hits. You know,
They had a higher top speed than the Japanese planes did. But the Japanese were far more maneuverable.
Yep.
So they could catch up with you really well, but then you could kind of outfly.
How'd that work out for them?
Yeah.
You know what I was
didn't really outfly anybody.
1,500 dead to 25 dead.
I was trying to figure out how do nose mounted machine guns work on a plane? Like, they go through the prop? Like, it's timed somehow? It's timed and makes it through the prop.
Yes.
When they pull the rate of fire, somehow it knows.
Yep.
How the fuck does that work?
It's the prop.
Timing of the motor.
The prop I think the motor, the chain that's driving the prop is the chain that's feeding the gun.
Oh, so it will not allow because the chain link moves. That's still crazy.
Yeah.
That is such
a
risk.
They had four guns on the plane.
Yeah, they had 250 fucking 50 cals
in the nose.
Massive guns. And then they had two 30 cals in the wings.
Which still 30 calibers. And the Japanese planes had two, a 12.7 millimeter and a 7.7 millimeter. Yep. Which are still big. I think that's close to a 50 and a 30 cal, but they only had two guns.
So. And they didn't get through a lot of the armor.
Yeah, the rate of fire wasn't as fast. The rate of fire on the Flying Tigers weapons were way faster, way harder hitting.
It's a 50 cal, dude. Yeah. It's like throwing a screwdriver through their fucking
plane. Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the 12.7 millimeter is close to the 50.
Right.
But and the 7.7 is close to the 30. But the rate of fire, probably the powder charge, I don't know how they had them
set up. Well, that P-40 plane was so robust, I guess, like that Tex guy was telling a story that he got hit and he had a 5-inch circumference hole in the block of the fucking engine.
Yeah.
And he continued to fly and fucking kill people and then headed home when he took off. Like, that's crazy. There's no oil left in the fucking engine if there's a 5-inch hole in the block.
And there's another talk that he gave the first time he got in a, like, and he was one of the most famous ones, this guy named Tex. He, in his very first combat that he saw, shot down, if I'm remembering the story right, he shot down three, I think he shot down two bombers and a fighter. Is that right? Or am I making a different story? Was it three fighters?
I think they killed a bunch of bombers. Right? They killed four bombers in that first encounter. And then he took three fighters out the very next time, and the other guy took out one. I don't know if that was the same battle, but they took out only four bombers the first time, but sent them packing. They all took off and retreated.
Actually, no, this I take that back. This one didn't involve bombers. They were doing strifes on an airfield.
That's
and
right.
And the guy in front of Tex did his strife and hit all the planes. And then as Tex was supposed to do his dive, he saw a Japanese plane coming in on the tail of the guy in front of him. So he engaged with him, blew him up, and then had to engage with another one and basically had to play fucking chicken.
Yeah.
And they were just flying straight at each other, shooting. Obviously, the P-41 because it had bigger firepower and armor, but Texas plane got fucking hit a lot. And he said he didn't think he was going to make it all the way back because it was so impossible to steer. And the whole plane was rattling so hard that he almost broke his wrists keeping the stick still.
Damn.
And when he got there, it was because
there were bullets stuck in the prop.
There were bullets stuck in the prop.
Yeah.
And it fucking threw off
balance.
It threw off the entire tilt of the motor.
This entire fleet was put together basically they mostly did defensive stuff. So like the Japanese were trying to bomb different areas of the Chinese trade routes and stuff.
Yeah. Like there was a specific road that was one of the main ways. It was they called it the Burma Road.
Yeah.
And it was the main way that the Chinese government was getting war supplies. Because at this time, keep in mind, we're not in the war. And everybody always thinks about the fact that, you know, in the 30s, Hitler was slowly consolidating power in Europe. But at the same time, the Japanese, or what they called the Nipponese army, was conquering everything in the East.
Yeah.
Like they were devastating China and they were capturing Korea and the Philippines. And I mean,
were they considered, how does that work? Like they came out of enlistment in the U.S. Army to go get enlisted in the Chinese Army.
Yeah. So here's the backstory on how they got formed. Okay. So, and it's pretty fucking crazy.
I'm just worried how that geopolitical, like, how does that work? Like, is that look like Americans fighting or no? That's Chinese Army and some rogue Americans flying those fucking planes that went and like defected.
No, it was a big deal that they were Americans. They were like heroes back home.
I get that, but I'm saying like on a political scale, how did the Japanese view it? Was it like an act of war from America? Because these are American people in.
Well, here's what I know. So the main guy, the guy that ran it, who called himself Colonel Chenault, the guy named Claire Chenault, and he called himself Colonel because he was only a major. But as soon as he signed on with the Chinese Air Force, he said, bitches, I'm a colonel. And they were like, okay. So he was never really promoted. He just promoted himself. But American, born in Louisiana. Yeah. He flew in World War I. And apparently he was one of the best pilots in America. And as morale, he and a group of three other people would go around with like current day. And this is pre-war. This is pre-American involvement in the war. It was actually like in 1935, 1936. And he would do like air shows with like official Air Force, you know, airplanes. And he would do acrobatics and aerial maneuvers with three planes. And in the middle of the show, and this is what got him his job as the head of the Flying Tigers. Did you read about any of the acrobatics that he did?
I just saw that he did air acrobatics and decided
he would land. He and his other two pilots would land. He would be in the middle plane. They would be on the side. And in front of the whole crowd, engine still running, he would take out two 20-foot lengths of rope, and he would tie the lengths of rope from his wing to the other person's landing strut.
Damn.
And then all three of them would take off and start doing barrel rolls and crazy maneuvers. And if anyone fucked up, it would have torn both of his wings off.
Right.
And he would have fallen from the sky and died. And he landed actually on his last maneuver, because while he was in the Air Force, apparently he had a big mouth. He went against typical American policy. He was advocating that we get more involved. He was advocating that we need fighter pilots, not bombers. Like all this stuff that was unpopular, and basically they fired him without firing him.
Right,
they were like, just fucking resign. Like, you do not agree with anybody here. And the day he resigned, the last day that he flew, a general named Mao Peng So, who in 1937, who worked for China, who was currently being attacked by Japan, saw that flight demonstration, and they hired Chenault on the spot and said, will you come to Japan or come to China and help defend us against the Japanese? We need to build up an air force. We have no idea what we're doing. They're kicking our ass. Yeah. So this guy ends up going over there, and he convinces them. He's trying to convince them to get particular types of planes. He's trying to get him a bunch of bombers and a bunch of fighters.
Those planes that they bought were originally destined for like Great Britain.
Yeah, they were supposed to go to England to help in the Blitz, but they ended up giving him to China under this thing. So what happens is the president of the United States, Roosevelt, signs a secret executive order that allows for the recruitment of U.S. military aviators and ground personnel for the AVG, the American Volunteer Group, which is going to temporarily work for China. Apparently it was so secretive that everyone went over there with false papers. The government gave them false passports, false identities, did everything to ship them over there. They paid them 3 to 4 times as much as they would have been paid if they were pilots in the U.S. Air Force.
Top pay was $750 a week. I was trying to do the math. Yeah. I was like, I wonder what the rate of inflation is. Like, how much was that?
That's probably a lot back then.
Yeah, a lot.
Early 40s.
Like, that's not bad right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fucking lot.
No, that was a month. That was a month.
A month. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So that is bad right now.
It would be bad. So they end up
getting Navy commanders. There's people from the Army, the Navy, the Marines, everybody that they can find. They sign a 1-year contract, and they're told when your time is up, you can come back to your American service. You'll have the same rank, but we need you to do this for a year in secret, and no one's going to know who you are or that you're over there, right? So this is sort of this really a black ops mercenary group that America is sending over to help keep China stable and to help destabilize Japan.
And this question is all before communist China too.
Because Chiang Kai-shek, I believe, was in charge of China, and he was battling the Chinese communists, mm-hmm. and he was battling Japan. So they wanted him to battle they actually said, don't use this for your internal battle. You'll only use our planes to battle Japan. And there was a constant political struggle of him wanting to use it to stop Chinese communists as well, but they only did attacks on Japan.
And it's pretty crazy because Japan, it's why it's significant, because Japan had been training an Air Force military for decades mm-hmm. before this. So they had trained pilots that were very strict samurai they were going to die for the emperor, you know, like they at all costs they were going to do what they needed to do,
right?
So they had been doing that for decades, and so this is why this is so significant, because if not, things would have went entirely different,
right?
World War II.
Right. Think about the mentality that the kamikaze, like, that's crazy to have kamikaze Just if you're going to crash into some shit, like,
right. Well, you die honorably instead of just crashing in the water, you kill some
it's
shit.
It's that samurai. That's what I was getting at. It's that samurai mentality. Yeah. Cause you could act like that's going to be your motive, but until it comes down to it, like, you're in your moment of death, but the percentage of they followed through. They did that.
But the thing is though, a lot of the kamikazes weren't, it's not like, oh, I'm getting shot down, I might as well crash into this thing. They launched knowing they were going to, like, they
that was the plan.
Like, they had the a plan. Ceremony yeah. before they even got on the plane.
Right.
And it's their the same plan thing was, with suicide bombers and stuff, right, you know. Right. They know that's what they're going to do. Like, this is what's happening.
So they end up in this crazy area. They start he starts training people in Burma Shino does to start doing this stuff. And the Flying Tigers end up being, consists of three squadrons of 33 aircraft each once they finally get their 100 planes. So the first squadron was called the Adam and Eves. And I think that was the one that Tex was in charge of. The second squad was called the Panda Bears. Very intimidating. And the third squad was actually called the Hells Angels, which is largely where
they weren't Hells allowed Angels. To wear their patches.
Yeah. They couldn't wear their patches. So that's really where the Hells Angels term comes from. And at this time, they had, and you can see the picture of it. You'll see
there. I think if history had gone another way and the Panda Bears was the most scary motorcycle game.
The Panda Bears or the Adam and Eve.
The Adam and Eves.
I thought about that, but that became an adult channel. And Panda Bears.
Panda Bears are scary, though. They'll fuck you up.
Fuck yeah, they will. Especially if you're bamboo.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're black
you're
and white.
If you're bamboo, you're in trouble.
They'll fuck you up. And they had to wear what they called a blood chit. Mm-hmm. Which was the patch on the back of their jacket. And it was the flag, the Chinese flag was on the top of the back of their jacket. And then below it was basically in Mandarin and Cantonese, it said, these are members of the Chinese Air Force, save them and bring them home. Basically, so that if they crash, they're not going to get shot by some Chinese soldier or hauled out of the water by the Navy and then just like put to death. They're like, oh shit, these are our guys.
What if you lost your jacket?
You're fucked.
You're fucked.
I wonder if that's the origin of the patching thing, like if that translated as well, like for the Hells Angels.
It might be. Yeah. You had your jacket and you couldn't do without your patch. Like that patch was the life patch or death. Important. It very well might have been.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because one of the missions, I believe it wasn't Tex that hit the water. He didn't make it back. He landed in the water and he's like, I'm American. Yeah. Like, you know, don't shoot me.
That might have been the Archie guy, actually. Yeah.
Oh, was it?
I don't know.
I can't remember which one it was.
Robert Neal.
And the reason this is an interesting one is if you start to, I mean, I think all but three of them are currently deceased.
Which is crazy too. Like, one of them's like a major colonel, or what is it? Not a colonel. colonel.
Colonel.
Major colonel. Like, he's like a major colonel now. You know, like, he went on to become
right.
high
yeah,
up,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know.
And the... Like, I even saw a video. There was one of the guys, he was actually like the head engineer who patched all the planes together, and he's 96.
Yeah.
And they ended up, like, basically they brought a P-40 and a pilot and put him in the back seat and flew it around, and he got to ride.
He had a heart attack.
Take the ride. Yeah.
He died happy.
He got to take the ride. But so we have this group who's training and engaging in battle with the Japanese for the sake of the Chinese. But since the Chinese really didn't know the tactics, they didn't know what to do, they didn't know Americans, they kind of just, like, as you would see, you'll see interviews with them, and they were like, you know, we found out that they kept, like, the Japanese kept doing bombing runs on this area and this area at night, so Tex and I just decided we're going to take off tonight and go do this. And it's like, they would just decide to go do yeah. some shit, and there wasn't this traditional chain of command. They were just a bunch of fucking hot dogs.
And it was so, God, so scary and impressive, though, because they had to just do it by the light of the moon.
Yeah. Like, that was the thing. Like, they engaged in these bombers.
They flew at two different altitudes. He's like, well, he'll see him. I'll see him if he's below me. They'll see him if he's above me. And if they're below him, the ground crew will shoot him. And they literally saw, like, a little bit of, like, an engine burn or something.
Right. Exhaust flames.
And the thing is, like, it was like, in fighter parlance at the time, if you were an ace, it was because you shot down five enemies, and that wasn't easy to do. Several members of the Flying Tigers became an ace in their first run.
Right.
The first time their plane took off, they shot down five yeah. motherfuckers and landed an ace.
I know.
Like, that's ridiculous.
At first, dude, I heard, like, oh, 15, he's a triple ace. I was like, that 15 doesn't sound like that much to me, but...
In a plane with people shooting at you?
Yeah, it's fucking... With yeah. machine gun strapped in front of it, yeah.
Like, you blew up.
Yeah.
Like, not I shot that guy and he went limping off and he was going low and there was smoke in the engine and he probably crashed.
There was some that went down and they said they couldn't confirm, but he's like, that one was a confirmed. Right. That one was a confirmed.
Yeah.
You know?
So five confirmed kills, and there were several members of the aces, or of the Flying Tigers, who became an ace on their first mission. Because, like I said, you know, 1,500 Japanese dead, 25 flying aces dead. That's
pretty good.
That's ridiculous.
Pretty good track record.
Yeah. But they had a reputation of, like, drinking hard and being crazy because no one really disciplined them. And I guess Chinook didn't really care as long as they were on their game and they followed the tactics and did the drills and got the job done.
If they did what he told them to do in the air.
That's all that
mattered. He didn't care what they did on the ground.
And he didn't even fly with the aces. He was just the guy who called all the shots.
They said, too, he would back them no matter what they did. As long as they were doing their job, he would back them no matter what they did. And that's why he was pretty awesome, they said, you know.
So
that
they
one,
would
that
just,
one video I watched, they were, like, riding water buffalo through town. They had a pet leopard.
Uh-huh.
They were just fucking
it's like whatever. Yeah,
it's kind of Vietnam looking, like, running around with their shirts off and shit, just do whatever the fuck they want, playing poker.
And there was one article I read, and I forget her name. She was the wife of one of the members, and she actually signed up as well and was part of the ground crew. And she kept a diary that ended up getting published of all the exploits. I'm drawing a blank on what her name is, but like, the rumor was that since most of them weren't attracted to Chinese women, that, like, everybody was having sex with this one guy's wife.
Oh no.
And, like, nobody had a problem with it. Like, from the thing I read, like, that was just that, like, was just, she was just close, like, cool. to all of them. And she liked them all and had sex with them.
Swinging.
And, like, it's just swinging with the flying tigers.
Like, but, she doesn't have chlamydia. Like, just keep it that way, boys.
Just keep it that way.
As long as you don't put your dick in that Asian over there, you can have sex with my wife.
Right.
Yeah.
So, so they're... So they end up having to develop, like, completely new tactics, and this is what Chenault did. And, like, the tactics just relied on raw speed and brute force and always, like, being above. Like, their main thing was, if we can get above them, our dive speed is so fast. And even one of them was talking in an interview when they were dealing with bombers, and he was diving down to get behind this center bomber.
That was a lot like the wife's technique too. They would always get behind. She was always going down. Right. Yeah, it's the same tactic.
It's the same tactic.
Practice in your off time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You want to internalize that.
But yeah, she would dive bomb the heavy machinery.
That's right.
She would get down on the gunner, you know.
He apparently sped down so fast that he thought he was going to come up behind this plane.
So many jokes.
I know. And he ended up like basically having to turn because he was going to hit the bomber because he was so fast, and he got too close and the bomber saw him and ruined the surprise and shot him. And he had to like bank hard to one side just to avoid crashing into him. And then like fit, like he said that he estimated he was 100 feet behind the bomber when he opened fire with his 50 cal. And he said the bomber just, it didn't blow up or anything, but it just dropped from the sky because he just killed everyone inside of them.
Yeah.
Well, 100 feet behind
them. Yeah, the bombers didn't have a whole lot of armor either.
Like they had rear guns like fucking Millennium Falcon.
They had one rear gun, one front gun.
Most of their armor was on the belly because they were worried about flak. They were worried about cannons shooting up, not the
fighters. So they shot them from the top and it just tore them apart. Disintegrated the planes.
So yeah, they came up with a whole thing of tactics. And again, like the tactics that he developed in this fighting ended up being tactics that made their way to every theater of war that the Americans learned. Whether you were fighting the Nazis, whether you were fighting whatever, the tactics that Chenault and the Flying Tiger came up with were the tactics that defined all of air combat for the United States Air Force during World War II.
Play chicken and shoot them.
Yeah, that's basically. And so the funky thing was they were, even though it was a clandestine mission and they were all over there secretly, apparently as soon as Pearl Harbor happened, America just was like, well, guess, look at our boys.
Yeah.
Like Pearl Harbor happened. And just a couple days later, the Flying Angels did, or the Flying Tigers did, two different strikes. And it was all over the news because America had no planes in the sky. All their ships were shot down. Pearl Harbor just happened. There was nothing. But all of a sudden, these American boys are kicking Japanese ass over China.
Like, don't mind the Chinese flags on the planes. Right,
exactly. So they suddenly became these big time, like hot shit celebrities / propaganda machines to say, look what Americans can do when we're in the fight. It's just a matter of time till we get enough planes that we can all be doing this.
Yeah. And this goes in the argument that Pearl Harbor was set up to try and get America on board to go into the fight. So,
because we were already in the fight. I mean, the president is signing backdoor deals and sending our top pilots into China. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's just a fucking crazy notion. Paying them under the table, making them sort of part of an enemy force, but not really, because they just follow their own fucking lead. Yeah.
Then once the first false flag happens, like, America's like, kill them. Like, get them. They're like, yes, this shit works.
Yeah.
Kill our own people. Fuck, this shit works. Right,
like, it's a pretty crazy thing. Yeah. But yeah, so Chiang Kai-shek ends up running him, and he's always
fucking Bip Bop Wap. What was that guy's name?
He worked for Chiang Kai-shek.
That was Fly Too Low.
Wham. Yeah, that was Fly Too Low.
Fucking Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am.
Something Wong.
Yeah, I think it was Something Wong.
And Chinese names.
Apparently, they were such badasses that the Japanese gave them the nickname of gangsters.
Damn.
So when they saw their term of gang, it's not like right now you would say, damn, that guy's gangster. Like, they're probably talking about the fucking Yakuza.
Yeah,
these are some cold-blooded, murderous bastards.
The Japanese had the law of three alls. Did you see that thing? Mm-hmm. It was like, kill all, like, loot all, burn all. Mm-hmm. Like, that was their fucking fighting tactic, the three alls. I was like, damn, that's like some fucking medieval castle times fucking burn the village
status.
Yeah, they said they would bomb them, steal all their fucking rice, and then burn the fucking place.
Make rice patties.
The woman who got around was named Olga Greenlaw, and she was the wife of Harvey Greenlaw, who was the first, I think he ran the second squad, if I remember right, but he was one of the squadron commanders. He was a captain. He was the first one that Chenault recruited.
I'm going to try to find her, see if she's good looking.
And much like Chenault, just like Chenault said, I'm now a colonel, not a major. The captain gave himself the promotion of captain. Or he was a captain. Yeah. And when he signed on, he said, I'm a major now. And they were like, whatever, because they just kind of did whatever the fuck they wanted to do. But it was pretty interesting. Did you find a picture of old Olga?
Yeah, she looks like Olga.
Yeah. I mean, in a yearbook, you know how hot chicks aren't our hot chicks now.
But stick yourself on.
I mean, she wasn't. Yeah. If you didn't like the Chinese people, stick yourself on
a Burma road, and she's going to be. It's either that or a wildebeest.
She has something on her chin in this picture, though.
She's.
It come from a goose.
Yeah, it looks like her dress is inside out on this one. She's kind of used up.
There's one right there. Like that was before they all had her way with her. she's like kind of normal looking, you know, like. And before she had stretch marks on her cheeks, like.
This is right before Wild Night. She's surrounded by all these dudes.
Yeah. She hadn't even had any babies yet, and she was just stretch marked out.
Right, like, yeah. So,
but yeah, in the creases of her hips. Like
that was the speculation of her. So then, like I said, December 20th, 12 days after Pearl Harbor, the AVG group engaged Japanese bombers, and they ended up doing two different attacks. They claimed.
This is her after one rough night. And
Jesus, what is that?
Lady with the lump, she got beat up.
So on their first engagement after Pearl Harbor, and again, this was great for the propaganda machine in the United States. The two battles, one of them, 23 Japanese planes got shot down with no Tigers getting shot down. And then the other one that was happening simultaneously, 10 Japanese craft got shot down with no Flying Tigers getting shot down. And that tended to be a kind of an average battle for them. And there's a documentary. If you look at the Discovery Channel documentary, they had a show on, it's probably not on anymore, but they used to have a show called Dogfights, which I used to watch quite a bit. And it's
I think you can find it on YouTube.
I could watch that. Yeah.
Dogfights is a cool show. The premise of Dogfights is they would take people who were in actual war documented dogfights. They would look at what the historians said, and the pilots in most of them, a lot of the World War II ones, they didn't have all the pilots, but if it was like Korea or Vietnam or the Cold War or whatever, the pilots were right there. Yeah. And pilots have that uncanny ability to recall everything in a fight.
Yeah.
So they're talking, and then there's a pretty good computer animation of the planes fighting.
Yeah.
And you get to see exactly what's happening, how much they're getting shot up.
It gives you the picture.
But you see there's one of the dogfights ones that's about them, and you see a lot of their major battles, and they're just fucking crazy.
What's amazing, is what we said. The two of the top pilots, Tex and the other guy,
Harvey,
are both alive and talking their way through the battles in that dogfight episode. So it's really cool. They're not in shape as they used to be.
No, they're older but they're just telling the fucking tale. And again, most of these guys are deceased now, but you can find plenty of video from the 80s and 90s of them being interviewed and talking about what they did when they were there. So the one, did you read about the weird radio thing that they came up with?
Read.
Or see anything.
So change your tone.
Most of my research is under 60 pages, so I get through some reading.
There was. One of the problems was, as is always going to be the case, they have no idea where or when the Japanese planes are coming in. And this seems like a pretty obvious solution, but no one had really thought of it. But Chennault ended up coming up with a list, basically a run of 165 radios that could each contact basically one or two or three on the very outer edge of their contact. And they would have the radios running 24/7 at these listening posts. So if you were sitting there and your radio kicked in, someone would say, I see a flight of five bombers and three things are heading south. Gotcha. And then within a couple of minutes, because there's no radar yet, there's nothing like that. So these radios would instantly get the information down to where the Flying Tigers would. Yeah. They would launch, and the Japanese were like, how the fuck do they always know where we are?
Right.
Because no one had done, because it was, I mean, you're talking about just like wild Chinese terrain.
Relaying communications. Yeah.
And apparently a lot of them had to be wired together in order for them to work or get wired to external power sources. And this guy, I'm trying to find his name. One of the guys who was there, a guy named John Williams, who was a friend of Chenault's, and he was there. He said that, and he helped organize this radio network. He said it was 165 radios. They were connected to each other. But then the one thing that he said in this quote, he said, however, the military two-strand communications wire was being cut and stolen almost every night, right? Not by Japanese people, but by Chinese people who were selling the copper or whatever.
Cable?
So, yeah. So the net became ineffective. We caught 21 of these wire cutting thieves, yet the wire was still being stolen. Finally, I went to the governor of Yunnan province and explained my problem. He said not to worry. He'd take care of the matter. A few mornings later, the governor called me and I went with him and my interpreter to a nearby hamlet. As we got closer to the village, I noticed there was a man hung by his neck, swaying from a pole at the entrance of the village. The governor had this wire thief hanged in front of the entire population of the thief's village. And this made the entire village lose face. The thief's family lost face for 100 years. The village lost face for 50 years. And from that day on, we never lost another inch of wire.
What but it was like 50 years, like, and then everything was good after that. Like, yeah, one day,
village, like, right, your village's honor will be restored in 50 years.
But the family's still got
family's got 100. So they found like the main guy that was in charge of all the wire thieves and buying the wire. They fucking hung him by his neck and it all just
stopped. Who holds you to it though? You're like in the village shopping for fucking chicken eggs and they're like, oh no. It's been 89 years, you know, and then finally like next year I'm fucking good. Yeah. Grandpa no, I died. Think
it's like, thing, it's like when the DUI comes off your record.
Yeah, you know, like
I'm finally out of bankruptcy.
I can drink and drive again.
Yeah. I don't think that's the takeaway from getting your license. No, you're not supposed to drink and drive.
But really, in a book somewhere, and then all of a sudden, fucking, this guy's like, oh, today I am honored. Who the fuck 50 knows? Years maybe, has passed. Day maybe. One. Yeah. I'm a new man.
You know fucking people. They're always looking
for people.
They're always looking for a scapegoat. They're always looking for someone to hate on.
It's just
like,
so weird,
if this
though.
Family, it's like, oh, 100 years. Fuck these people. Yeah. And for the next 100 years, we get to fucking throw rocks at them and shit.
All their kids get spit on and people fucking just nut on them in the street. Like,
But that's I promise you, that's going to keep you from losing face if that's what's going on for 100 fucking years.
That sucks. Yeah, I don't want my family banished for 100 years.
So yeah, that was their big technical invention that they all just kind of dreamed up sitting there in the middle of fucking Burma, and they came up with this crazy radio thing so they could instantly call in. Because like I said, it was such an untamed land that became really, really difficult to do, and he figured out that was a useful tool.
Seems like such an obvious thing, but it's just like lighting the fires on the tops of the mountains or whatever.
Right. You
know, it's the same thing.
No, I mean, it seems like an obvious thing, but I mean, it's like right now parachuting out of a plane seems like an obvious thing, and that they fucking dreamt that shit up in World War
II. One of the things, and I didn't even think about it, because when they started going on the offensive and bombing the Japanese airstrips and stuff, I was like, how the fuck are these guys not getting seen? But I didn't realize radar wasn't invented yet.
Right.
So that makes I was watching this and I didn't even think about that.
No, it was literally, and they would fly.
Because I was like, how are they not knowing when these bombers are coming? How do they not know? Yeah, but
exactly.
Yeah,
no, it's and crazy. they would fly as high as they could, and then at the last minute, you know, dive down. Because if you were flying high enough, it's going to be harder to see you. You're not going to hear the engine noise because those engines had to be loud as fuck.
It was like driving a Volkswagen bus through the air.
Yeah. I mean, you
a little louder than that.
You hear one of those.
It was like driving a bomber.
Some of those had the same engine, actually. They use the Volkswagen engine in planes. That's the same engine. I don't know if that one, but
no.
You and your throat throttle these days.
I don't think so. Anyway, did you hear about the guy that they caught banging Olga and he wasn't part of the crew?
No. Are you serious? Yeah.
So I guess one night Tex and Olga had set up a date and from his accounts, he walked in to, they were supposed to meet in this I don't know. I guess it was like a secluded area of like right on the backside of like a ham radio operator area, you know, where they were operating the radios. And a guy named Stephen Eakin went in and posed as Tex, I guess. Like it was dark and he started banging Olga out.
He pulled a Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, he was banging her out.
He dressed and up like Darth Vader and went to the moon room.
Yeah, and then Tex showed up. So they ended up catching the guy. They hung him in the middle of like their little area at the barracks. They hung him by his big toes, and they started throwing oranges at him. Like, and then they had all the Chinese people come out, and they were all throwing oranges at him, and they started spanking him with these sticks. They called them schlags, and they were smacking him. So he was naked, and they were just smacking him all over the place. And eventually they raped him. But that was after they tortured him for about 3 hours. So I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but they weren't happy. So that's what happens if you're outside of the group and you started banging Olga.
I don't believe a bit of that. And that's when they invented orange chicken. Leftover oranges.
I don't believe it either, but I'm on board with you.
Yeah.
Right. It comes to an end. I mean, all the fucking deeds they did only happens over 7 months of combat. And then it gets pretty fucked up. Typical U.S. military gets involved. So the contract runs out on July 4th, 1942, and the U.S. Air Force takes over the entire operation, and they establish the 23rd Fighter Group, and they start to get them in, and it's under a general, I believe, named Joseph Vinegar Joe Stillwell.
Yeah.
And apparently he's nickname. Just a complete fucking prick.
He told him, you can stay, or when you get home, we'll be waiting for you and we'll draft you to fucking infantry.
Right.
Yeah, put him on the front line.
Yeah. Yeah. They basically, you can either, and he told him all this, gathered them all in a room and said, you're either staying and fighting, or we will, when you are on the tarmac in the States, you'll be picked up with a draft letter.
I wonder, had he not approached it that way, maybe they wanted to stay. They were fucking drinking whiskey, banging Olga. They had a pet leopard. I mean, yeah.
But all that shit's going to go away anyway. Like, now you've got a military chain of command. Got you've got that discipline.
Yeah. Well, and they started having to do Olga two at a time because she'd be getting so loose. Like, it just wasn't singles anymore.
True.
When are they going to introduce the third guy?
Then the tiger got involved. It got crazy. Yeah. And Chenault ended up staying on.
The he leopard. Got promoted it was a leopard,
to be.
Wasn't it?
Oh, you're right. It was a leopard. He got promoted to brigadier general. He stayed on as the commander, and he convinced a bunch of them to end up staying. And they basically let some of them end up staying on as trainers, but not
for
as
only
combat.
2 weeks.
But here's the thing, though.
Well, no, they signed on as trainers. Right. They actually stayed. Tex was one of them.
But I mean, one of the reasons this is such a fucked up move is most people in the Air Force, you had a cap of how many missions you had to fly before they would take you out of the air because you've done your duty.
Right.
And these guys had been flying daily fucking raids for 7 months.
Yeah.
And just kicking at, and like some of them in their interviews were like, you know, I had a mental breakdown on about month 5 because I just couldn't go up there again, and it took me a long time before Chenault convinced me to get. But I mean,
you know what
they were
saying,
already
though?
In the fucking bowels of war for almost a year, and it was like, I mean, you know, they had done above and beyond what any pilot could be asked to do, and now they're being told you have to keep fucking flying.
You know what? There was instances where they were talking. They said like, oh, there was supposed to be somebody on my wing or this or that, but they couldn't get their engine started, or they had to turn back because something was happening.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, I wonder if those guys got scared, or, you know what I mean? They were having the mental breakdown, you know, shit happened. Like, and then the other guys just fucking went on without them, you know?
Yeah, because like their very first combat mission that they went on was 4 planes,
and one of them
had an engine problem and had to turn around.
He didn't say what the engine trouble was.
Right.
He said he had engine trouble.
No, there's a good
turn around, and only wonder. 3 of them went.
Which makes those other 3 even ballsier.
Yeah.
Like, oh, now we're down to 75%.
Instead of going back and be like, let's get somebody else or switch planes. Like, they just keep going. Yeah.
Like, they were just badasses. So they end up getting pretty much fucked over. A lot of them stay. Some of them leave. But even one of the things that was crazy is some of them who weren't pilots – like the people who weren't pilots, the Air Force didn't really give a shit about. They only wanted the pilots because they had the Air Force was coming in and could do all the other stuff. So there was one story that I read about a guy named Terry Lasansky, And, Terry Lasansky was the son of a guy named Lasansky. And he talked about the fact that they couldn't get back into the United States because their fake IDs didn't match anything. And the government did nothing to help.
They didn't give a shit.
So he said, quote, "My dad and his very good friend ended up traveling all the way to South Africa and became good friends with the U.S. consulate there. They were anxious to get back to the States, but they couldn't find a way. Like, they couldn't get out of the country. They couldn't even get on a plane to the U.S. because they had bad passports. They talked to American officials, and the officials advised them to make themselves, quote, undesirable. So they went to one of the more posh hotels in town, where dad and his friend then sort of broke up some of the furniture while drunk. It got them declared as undesirable by the local government officials, and they got tickets on an ocean freighter bound for the U.S. soon after.
Weird. So it's kind of like dangerous.
They could, but it's like the ones, I mean, if you were a pilot, you had to fucking stay or you were fucked. And if you weren't a pilot, you couldn't stay in China anymore. And the U.S. did nothing to get your back and get you home
because
it was all, yeah, it was very fucked up.
So they all had to,
these guys all had to come up with weird shit and funky ways to get home. And
after they use them as like, hey, look at these guys. Look what
they exactly. Did. Use them for the propaganda thing and then just fucking dump them.
Shit on them.
Sad soldier story, dude. That's what always happens.
Yep.
Fucking use them and lose them.
So yeah, they became the 23rd fighter group. And it was still one of the best fighter groups, even though most of them were people that were just trained by the Flying Tigers.
Yeah, there were a lot of Chinese that were just fucking getting it. They tore it up just like the other guys.
And ultimately, the 14th Air Force. Did we say that? The 14th Air Force Group is the one that now has the Flying Tigers logo on their plane.
No, you didn't say that name.
Okay. But eventually the 23rd Fighter Group got turned into the 14th Air Force, and the whole thing sort of had a lineage down there. But it's just like, and I saw, like, when I was doing the research on it, I found like 5 movies made about the Flying Tigers, like, between like 1945 and 1955, and then like nothing, like no one's like, when I think of like a war story, this is as fucking good as it gets. Like,
yeah,
you've got fucking drunken, like they're having sex with the same lady, they're mercenaries, they're kicking everybody's ass in the air. Like, that's just a crazy fucking story. That, and apparently, and I was like, how come no one's done this? And I guess the Chinese film director John Woo is currently filming a miniseries about them.
That'd be cool.
I'm very curious. And I guess there's a video game that just came out this year that's on Steam that has like a from what I read, it's fairly accurate historical recounts of the battle, but you play the battles as them. But no, it's a very interesting group of people.
I hope Liv Tyler plays Olga.
Her Kate Beckinsale would be good.
Why live? Because she was in fucking Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, probably why.
I didn't even think about that. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was more thinking, is it Empire Records? What's that? She was hot back in the day, but I haven't seen her in anything. She's Lord of the Rings, though. That was the last thing, though, right?
Yeah, and that was a fucking minute ago.
Yeah, she hasn't been in anything.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
She must have made her money and said, fuck off. So yeah, if you haven't heard of them, the Flying Tigers, the American volunteer group.
Maybe her lips fell off.
Mercenary army. They might have happened. Maybe your dad stole her lips to put into his own lips. Maybe. So you keep singing.
Like, she was sleeping at night. He came in there and just stole the fat out of him. Just like,
Scoola-doo-doo. Stealing your lips.
I wanted to try it. I have no Steven Tyler.
Stealing your lips.
I'm not sure I do.
Tyler's new song. Stealing your lips.
Steal my daughter's lips.
Hit songs like Lips in an Elevator. Yeah.
Can you feel my lips? I once had a cat named Lips. I did have a cat named Lips. That's a true story.
I can't think of any more Aerosmith songs.
Walk This Way, but I'm having a hard time throwing Lips in there without it being really bad.
Talk This Way. With your lips.
No, it's Talk This Way featuring Lips.
Featuring Lips, yeah.
Is it sponsor time yet?
It is.
And then we do have patrons. So
I do have patrons. I think
I did mine already.
He snuck his his patron in with the schlog beating in the orange.
Steven Eakin was banging Olga.
I almost threw mine in there, but I was fucking, I'm just like, I don't know what happened. That whiskey made me tired. I didn't drink a lot of it. I only had two glasses.
Well, you're alcoholic. Then you should be used to it by now.
Yeah.
I should. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what happened.
Maybe you slacked off this week. You weren't drinking as much.
I have not been drinking as much. I actually kind of, this sounds funny. I looked forward to the clank because I've been on that crazy diet and I'm like not drinking whiskey, not drinking at all. So like, I was like, I get to drink whiskey today. Those two little drinks. And it's not even really like, I didn't get a buzz at all. It's more about this shit tastes good.
It's a good pick. That's too. What alcoholics say.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Mm.
Be honest with me and open with me. Like, I'm telling you, think I'm truth. On slippery slope.
I keep saying stuff, and you
two
just
drinks is a problem. Two yeah, drinks a week.
Very much oh wait, did you say anything about the poster?
No, but I need to right now. Lucy motherfucking Robitussin. Lucy Robitussin sent us a fucking sick gift. It's one of the coolest gifts we've ever got, and it's even cooler if it's real. It makes it cooler, but if it's not, I still don't give a fuck. What does it say on it, Dave? So I don't have to pull out. They took a picture of it.
You don't want
to
pull out?
It's a vintage. I don't want to pull out. I never pull out. I hate condoms too. It's a vintage Gary Coleman poster. Like and, legit, like 80s.
Yep. And he's standing there and in a straight up 80s font, it says, my engine may be small, but look out for my steam.
It sounds choo sexual.
Choo. Yeah. And then it's supposedly signed. The Gary Coleman signature is on it. I don't know. We couldn't confirm or deny if it's authentic.
Definitely a Sharpie. So yeah. Somebody wrote
right.
it.
Somebody wrote Gary Coleman signature on it. I need to do some research to see if it looks like an actual Gary Coleman signature. I'll post an image of it someplace or other.
But thank you, Lucy Robitussin.
Pretty awesome.
Or she signed it.
She could have. It looks like the Sharpie looks the same age as the poster.
She might have got an old Sharpie.
Yeah.
I used my monocle. I checked it out.
Your monocle.
Yeah. I do have a monocle. I keep it in a little case on my nightstand. I examine jewelry in my spare time. Thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. They're available at most major grocery stores. You can get it at Walmart and Target. It's two aisles over from where you think you saw it. You're taking a deep breath. You're about to say something over there.
No, I'm yawning. I'm fucking tired.
Go to their website, elyucateco.com. You could fuck your cousin, but you'd be a cousin fucker.
Yeah.
And your kids' you eyes now will be close up. Together. I'm trying
waking
to wake
up
right
now.
Up.
Yeah. And that worked.
Yeah. Got me hard.
He's already got a cousin in mind.
You yeah.
You're my cousin.
Actually,
what?
I was going to say, actually, I don't really have any family, but then I got sad.
I did get sad.
Dave feels bad now. For a minute, but then he realized he hates white people, so he's happy again.
No, I never really got sad because at the end of that line was you having sex with one of your cousins.
Yeah. I like how you said actually, though. I was just waiting for you to put like, my one cousin, Susie's hot as fuck. Like, I was waiting, what were we going to say? your facial expressions, you're holding something really back.
I haven't seen,
you
changed I haven't your seen mind. My family in a long time.
Girl, but I bet she grew up to be hot. She's cute and she's little.
Well, I was just thinking, like, I'm like, well, it was my stepdad. So
you're seeing how many what the separation was.
It was stepdad, so it's not really blood. So you're good. I'm good.
What's her name, Brad? Yeah, I'm clean. Dare you say it?
Nah, I don't know. I don't have any family.
It's lies. It's making me all sad.
I don't.
When you get sad, I get hard.
My grandma raised me, and she's dead.
You make me hard when you're
I'm
sad.
I'm just waiting for my parents to die so I can piss on their graves.
Damn. Nice. Sponsor twist. Thanks, Print Dirt Cheap. Go to printdirtcheap.com for all your printed goods and use code SOFKING to save some money while you do it.
Keep going.
What? Yeah.
I want Brad to chime back in with some weird shit. I want to have a sponsor twist.
You want me to? Oh, they could print me a sticker that says, I'm glad you're dead. See you in hell. And I'll stick it on their casket.
There you go. Thanks to DeLeon Graphics. It's graphics with an X, and you can find him on Facebook and Instagram. He does silk screening, shirts, and koozies.
Yeah. Make me a shirt that says, fuck off, mom. You're a bitch.
Thank you to Digital Creations for our coffee mugs. They're available in our store. You can contact them directly. They're on Facebook and Instagram, and they can make specialty goods for you as well.
And you can hit your dad in the face with it.
Thank you to Camryo Jiu-Jitsu. You can log into armhunter.com for apparel and instructional DVDs.
You can also go there to learn how to break your parents' arms.
That's true.
That's right. And then stuff them down their throat after you rip them off their bodies.
That's what a Wookiee does.
Then you just Google how to get rid of a body.
That's what a big wolf does. Speaking of Wookiees.
It's a big wolf.
Wolf. I'm sorry.
So, okay. I have one patron that I want to thank. And so he gave us only a singular name. I do want to thank him. I appreciate all of our patrons. We talked via the Instagram messenger this week. And his name, the only name that he gave us... was Joshua.
Well, it's because he didn't like his last name.
Well, here's the thing though, because I asked him, I was like, you know, why did you just have Joshua? And he said that he knew that he wanted to walk down one of two paths in life. He either wants to be a male model where you just have one name, I'm Joshua, or he wants to be a cult leader where he's only got one name and it's Joshua. And he was hoping that we would get something posted, like someone would post on the official fan group to determine whether Joshua should become a cult leader or a supermodel or something else that only has one name.
He sounds like a computer from an 80s movie.
Kind of.
Like War Games.
So he seemed like a good guy, but he's just confused. He needs a little bit of advice.
I'd have picked a better one name, though.
I think it might have been his real one name. He just ditched the last name.
That's sad.
His last name was Rubber Dildo.
It was worth the silence. Waited.
Okay. It's a horrible last
name. It is. Like, wouldn't you just pick your first name?
Speaking of rubber dildos,
Joshua sounds so much better. Yeah.
I talked to Patty Larson, one of our patrons, who's an exotic dancer, and she's well informed on rubber dildos. It's kind of weird that she just became a patron and we covered this topic because she's actually has something to do with it. Her great, great, great grandmother is Olga Greenlaw. And so that's how she became an exotic dancer. It's sort of the family business.
Oh,
she didn't want to be a complete whore. So she's not like fucking 30 guys every day. Instead, she's just
only 20.
Yeah. She's just shaking that thing and making that money. So,
it's the family way.
It's respectable. Yeah. She's just, it's an appreciation for the female figure
and for the,
as opposed to objectifying herself the way your grandmother did.
It's patriotic. I mean,
it's patriotic.
She's respecting what her great grandmother did in order to support the troops.
You got to keep the morale high.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Her grandmother made a sacrifice for her country.
She did.
But Patty,
you got to keep the morale high and keep the oral low. You know what I'm saying?
The oral low.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patty's not as respectable, but we appreciate it though, Patty. Thank you.
Sorry, Patty. All right.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right, well, once again, we've completed another episode. I think it's our last episode.
Oh, t-shirt.
Oh, t-shirt. No, it's the last day.
It's the last day.
Tonight, midnight, no more.
11:59. Not even midnight for no confusion.
11:59:01.
That is not a thing. That's a second. What are you doing?
No.
11:59:01.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be 11:59:59?
Are you 5'12"?
No. 11:59:01. I'm 5'12".
I'm 5'17".
That'd be
at 9:02:10 p.m.
It'd be 5'11¼".
At exactly Beverly Hills, the sale is over.
Yeah, 9:02:10.
So our UFO t-shirt is still currently on sale, but it stops.
This is it. Yeah.
June 9th at just before midnight. If you want the shirt, get on there and get it.
If you're a Patreon member, don't get confused about this. It's Friday, right? If you listen to this Monday.
Right.
So Friday.
So
the 9th.
So yeah.
June 9th is the 9th, regardless of when you listen to this. Yeah.
Except next year.
And man, yesterday was my birthday, and I'll tell you,
you look like you're hungover.
What a ringer that was, my birthday.
Did you make it to Sandrini's?
So crazy. It's such a blur.
Curtis gave you a blowjob?
My day was
Did you
such
give him
blur.
The blowjob symbol? Like
my
you
day
did
was
the
such
guy?
A blur, I can hardly recall.
You just remember the back of his head.
I'm going to need to get...
They've got tofu wasted.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You had vodka tofu.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was nice hanging out with you guys at Sandrini's yesterday, though, for sure.
I didn't make it.
I'm
sorry. I'm
glad so many people showed up. Brad's an asshole. He didn't show up. He's out right now.
I got things to do.
Yeah.
I had things to do. All right. Well, I guess that's it. It's our last show. Hopefully our content lasts long enough to where people can go back and listen to it. So that's it. So before anybody gets sad, I'm just going to say, don't be a retard.
Tiger style.
Tiger style.
Yo. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. There's no place to hide as I step inside the room. Dr. Doom, prepare for the boom. Bam! Oh, man! Ah, slam! Damn! I scream like Tarzan. I be tossing and forcing. My style is awesome. I'm causing more family feud than Richard Dawson. And the survey said, you're dead. Baby flying guillotine chop, swap your fucking head. Mister, who is that?
Hey yo,
the who is back? Making niggas go boom boom like I'm Super Jack. Me fear no one. Oh no, here come the Wu-Tang Shogun. Kill her to her eardrum.
Put the needle to the groove, I get screwed and I'm forced to fuck it up. My staff carries like a pickup truck. Cross the clear blue yonder. See the China Sea, I slam tracks like quarterback sacks from LT. Now I try and test the rebel lioness. Bless since the birth, I earn slam your best. Cause I bake the cake, then take the cake and eat it too with my crew while we head state to state.
And if you want beef, then bring the ruckus. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. Straight from the motherfucking stomach that's busted. Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
Niggas is Sleepy Hollow. In fact, I'm a hard act to follow. I dope for Dolo. Bogart coming on through. Niggas is like, oh my god, not you. Yes, I come to get a slice of the punk in the pot. Rather do than die. Check my flavor. Coming from the visor with the show for the razor. Who make me reminisce true like Deja? Who? I'm rubber. Niggas, it's like glue. Whatever you say, bro, so I'm mistakes. You know,
Tiger style. Tiger style.